I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, writer S. Pearl Sharp defends new immigrants. But first...
Tell them to buckle up, chink, chink, because this is a show with shocking revelations.
Three racial slurs you're about to hear cut deep. And that's exactly why they were chosen by the writers of a new hit play. Before we tell you about it, we have to tell you the title may be offensive to some listeners.
Are you in or are you out?
The play is called Nigger, Wetback Chink, and it has drawn huge crowds around the country. Its message, an in-your-face response to stereotypes, is performed by three multi-ethnic former UCLA students. The comedy mixes hip-hop, slam poetry, and true-life stories of how these three explosive words have affected the lives of these three men. Joining me from KPCC in Pasadena, California, are those men, Miles Gregley, Rafael Augustine, and Alan Axabal. Gentlemen, thank you all so much for speaking with me.
Hello.
Hola.
Hello.
Rafael, how did you start with me, if you would? How did this play come about?
You know, it's funny. We asked that in the show. We say, how did three guys like us meet? And we imagine it was probably Compton or Chinatown or East L.A. But the truth is actually more telling about the state of minorities today, I think, because we all met at community college. Some of us just had no drive to finish school. Some of us had no money to get a higher education. And some of us just had no legal papers to be in this country.
Not mentioning any names like Rafael.
Not mentioning any names.
Could be anyone.
So the three of us met at community college, where we also met Stephen T. Siegel and Liesl Reinhardt. For people that don't know, those are our token white people. Mm-hmm. They are our co-directors, and they co-wrote the show with us. And it's very telling that Liesl was our professor, and she kept in touch with us throughout our transferring from community college to UCLA, to university.
Well, what did you meet, in a playwriting class, or what was it that drew you together?
Oh, that's funny. We actually met at the speech and debate team. I actually just wanted to go to UCLA because my parents always wanted to be doctors at UCLA. It was their dream why they came into this country. So I wanted to fulfill that dream, maybe not through medicine, but through theater. And my counselor said, we don't have a theater program, but we have the best speech and debate team in the nation. I walked into that room, and that's where all of us met.
Yeah, and this is Alan. I walked into that room because I was a geek, and I really wanted to do speech and debate.
And Miles,
yeah,
and what about you?
Yeah.
Miles Ellington Gregley.
Miles Ellington Gregley. Thank you. I actually ended up in the speech and debate team because it was the only thing left. I was there for about 8 years in community college, and I had taken all the classes. And I was like, well, what is this? And I stumbled into this classroom, and it was a beautiful experience.
What made you go, and Miles, maybe you can sort of pick up the ball here, what made you go from just sort of being pals in community college to putting together a sort of a provocative piece like this? Would you just start talking one day and thinking, I don't know, how did it come up?
Well, it's very interesting because Rafael was actually heavily involved with theater, you know, before this whole thing had gotten, you know, had taken off to where it is today. You know, I was steadily involved with a lot of stand-up comedy, doing a lot of places around Los Angeles. And Alan was involved with the slam poetry circuit. And so when we had all transferred, we started thinking about things like, you know what, we wanted to perform more. We knew we were good together, you know what I mean? Because we just took all three of our strengths and decided to make a show. Because Rafael and I were actually in the theater and film department at UCLA. And we just realized that, you know what, there's not a lot of things out there for people of color, things for our generation, things that are really fun to watch. And we're like, well, you know, let's create our own work, you know. But like I said, we didn't expect it to leave the campus. We just did it there. We were like, okay, let's have our own show. And next thing we knew, we were on a national tour.
But how did it start? Were you all, I mean, the whole thing of like just go right to, you know, the N word, the W word, the C word. I've said it once. I'm not saying it again.
So. Yeah, that's tough.
Right.
I understand. Yeah, we were really interested in doing something together and performing together. And we knew that, you know, we had these different strengths and that they'd work in a way that would create a kind of synergy. And while we were, you know, developing concepts and thinking about, you know, what this was going to be about, I'm not sure which person it was, but we just realized that the three of us represent three of the largest minorities in America. And we thought, you know, what better show to do than that, to represent and do something about that, because that has a mass appeal in its own sense. You know, one of the first things that we created was, if you've seen the show, it's called List Game, where we talk about the differences, you know, the stereotypical things that are given to each ethnicity, but then we found these similarities at the same time.
Okay, do List Game for me. Do me a little bit of List Game. Somebody start.
Okay,
here we go.
Go ahead.
List Game. List some stereotypes that are commonly made about your ethnicity. Go.
Rice eater.
Bean eater.
Watermelon.
Honda Civics.
1987 Cadillac Coupe de Ville on doves with a wood grain steering wheel, the brains blown out, you know what I'm saying? It got some tinted windows on it.
Bus.
Athletic comedian with a rap star career on the side.
Internet programmer, math tutor, or a computer analyst for a Fortune 500 company.
Maid, janitor, grape picker. It really depends on what truck picks me up in front of the Home Depot in the morning.
Okay, I'm getting uncomfortable.
But see,
which raises the point. How do people respond to her?
Well, that's the thing. You didn't get to the end.
Okay.
We finally get to this place at the end of it where we accidentally start listing things that are similar to each other.
Okay, go ahead. Let's hear it.
I've lost my emotion now.
I'm sorry.
Just keep going
where
we started.
Keep going. It's okay.
Well, you can tell me about it. Well, that's fine. Alan, that was you, right? You were talking, right? So you get to a place of similarity. What are some of those?
Yeah, we started naming things like we said hardworking, you know, and we said strong family ethic, and we got to public schooling, and then the last one was minority. The point of that was to really show that we had a lot more in common than we thought. You know, these different ethnicities, we started talking about our stories, and we found that the stories coming from different backgrounds and different ethnicities were a lot more similar to each other than we had ever realized.
I'm talking with Alan Axebal, Rafael Augustine, Miles Gregley. They star in the hit controversial play Exploring Stereotypes. How do people respond to it? Do they have the reaction I have, which is you're sitting there, you're feeling, okay, I'm not sure I'm liking this, and then they get to a place where it feels better.
Yeah, people always get really comfortable right away. Honestly, when we start doing the show, you put the stereotypes out there, you put the words out there, and you get a little bit of that shock value of people going like, wow, those words and wow, those stereotypes. But the show really does use humor to a point. It does try to break down and attack the notion of race itself.
Exactly. I was going to ask, what is the point?
Well, am I the only? Okay.
Alan is not like the smart one because
he was just picking up the ball. Go ahead. I assume because you all are gentlemen and you're waiting for Alan to finish, and I assume that others
distinguished
would politely interject. So, Alan, what is the point?
We do have one major theme in the show, which is that there's only one race, the human race. And it's such a simple thing, but you'd be surprised when we take it around the rest of the United States how that's such a realization for some communities.
And Miles, how are you observing that it's a revelation for some people?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you leave California, and the interesting thing about California itself is it's very diverse, you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's very segregated. You know, we kind of tend to stick to our own group. When we leave California, you get all types of stories of people. And the one thing that I notice is that people identify with you, and they don't necessarily have to be black. Like, you know, me, myself, like people that are white or Latino or Asian have come up to me after the show and be like, dude, I completely understand the struggle that you went through, and I went through the same thing. And that's what the whole show is about. It's not just about being black, Asian, or Latino. It's just about being an individual and growing up and trying to find out who you are and finding that self-love.
Why use these words?
Well, we do want people to understand that there's a difference between calling people these words and having a dialogue about them. And that's part of the reason why we're using those words, to have that dialogue, because we feel that being PC, it's got its place, but I think that it's suffocated the dialogue a little bit about race. And we wanted to use these words and put them in people's faces so that it would provoke some kind of reaction so that people would start to talk about these issues.
Can I just stop you right there? Because, Miles, I think some people would argue that these words are plenty in our face. There's been a lot of discussion about the use of these words this year. I think all of you, I'm sure, remember the whole controversy around the radio personality Don Imus, who was taken off the air because of his use of a lot of these words over the years, but in sort of a particular context. And there are people who would argue, you know, enough already. We get it. None of these words originated in any of these groups, okay? In each of the groups that you are a part of. These words did not originate in these communities. They were used as a weapon against these communities. And some people would argue that for members of these communities to embrace these words only gives permission to other people to use them. So what would you say about that? Miles, you start. Maybe Rafael, you want to pick it up.
I was watching this documentary called The N-Word, and Paul Mooney, who was a famous writer for Richard Pryor. Are you familiar with Paul Mooney?
He's been on the program many times.
Paul Mooney's an excellent writer, an excellent performer. And in the documentary, he says, the first time I heard the word nigger was out of a black person's mouth. You know what I mean? And a lot of people are growing up like that. You know, the youth now of today have no idea the power that that word has. You know what I mean? You hear it in hip-hop, but, you know, back in the day when hip-hop artists were using it, I think there was a purpose to it. You know, they were using it as far as depowering that word or using it as kind of like a term of endearment within brotherhood. I can't define what that word means for the next black person. For me personally, I don't use that word, but I do think that it's important for the youth today to have an understanding where it came from before they just go blurting it out.
Rafael, what about you? Because there's also been a dialogue, I think, in the Latino community about the use of the word, the W word, along the same lines.
You mentioned that so much has been done this year over the use of these words in the bad way.
why don't we ever get coverage on the use of these words in the proper way, the way that we're trying to use them, like in art? These words have tried to take place of our cultural identity, so we're trying to tackle these words. You asked us why use these words? Well, why not? People use these words against us. So yeah, let's talk about this. You know, that's the most important thing about the opening of our show. We have three individual stories to talk about the first time we heard these words and how these words affected our lives at a very young age.
Who comes to your show?
You know, the one thing that we notice is we bring a diverse group of people to our shows. You know, when we first started, we started at UCLA. But once we left, we realized that there's a lot of people that want to talk about this dialogue and wanted to be involved. And it age and ethnicity and creed had nothing to do with, you know, everybody was interested in watching the show and thinking about it.
I wanted to ask that. Have you observed that your predominantly white audiences respond differently than your more diverse audiences? Or do you find that it depends on where you are, perhaps more around the country?
Slightly differently. There are little nuances everywhere, definitely. I mean, whatever community you go to. But we feel that when you have a multicultural, diverse audience, there's this validation to laugh, you know, because if there's a black joke up there, you know, and the Asian guy's like, should I laugh at that? And you see everyone else laughing at it, and you think to yourself, oh, it's okay to laugh at that. And we've had some, you know, predominantly white audiences take a longer time to warm up to it because they don't have that same validation, but they do warm up to it at the end, and they do get the point, because what we're doing, like Miles says, is we've made the play all-inclusive. You don't have to be black, Latino, or Asian to enjoy or appreciate the stories. It's about being human and growing into, you know, your own personal identity.
You've talked about the ways in which you feel that the play is transforming for the people who are seeing it. Has there been something about this experience that's been transforming for you?
In writing the show, in particular for me, we were very close friends before we wrote the show, but there were still things we had never known about each other. I remember when we first talked about when these words were first used against us, and Alan was talking about chink and how it affected him, and that was the first time that someone told him, why don't you get the surgery done? And I said, what the hell is the surgery? Hmm. He's like, oh, the eye surgery. It's very common among Asian communities. And I said, what?
Yeah.
And I thought that was so amazing that we knew each other so well, but we didn't know that part about each other.
And Rafael, while we have you for just the last minute that we have left, I understand that something very special is happening for you this week.
Yes, this Thursday I am going to be sworn in as a U.S. citizen after 20-some-odd years in this country.
That just must be amazing, particularly to have that come at a time when there's been so much dialogue around the whole immigration experience, especially the illegal immigration sort of experience. So is there a way in which your experience over the years, first as an illegal immigrant and then as a person sort of in this middle ground, in this kind of a netherworld or purgatory in a way, because you're sort of stuck and now you're a public figure. How do you even think about that? Or is there something about that experience that you can share that's part of the work?
The very first thing you said is, how did the show get started? And part of it was my need to tell my parents' story, that they lived in this country. We lived in this country 14 years illegally, and we had no rights, and it's our survival in this country. It's the idea that no one wants us here, but we pay taxes every day of our lives that we spend in this country. The whole concept of the American Revolution, where there's no taxation without representation, and that's exactly what they're doing to a lot of people here who are afraid to speak out, a fear of deportation. And I was just trying to give a voice to this group of people. And it's very beautiful that it happened right before the immigration debates, because now that we're focusing on legal immigration, there is something concrete out there that people can put a face to. You know what I mean?
I do. Well, congratulations. And
thank
welcome.
You. Thank you
I'm
so
happy
much.
To have
and
you.
And I would like to thank this country for accepting me.
Well, I think that's very nice. Rafael Augustine, Miles Gregley, and Alan Axibal form in a hit controversial play that explores stereotypes and racial slurs. They joined us from KPCC in Pasadena, California. Gentlemen, thank you all for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Take care.